Thank you, Dr. Lee, and good morning, everybody. I work at ICRISET, and I will be presenting the nutritionally dense chickpea and pigeon pea germplasm lines that we have identified at ICRISET. And these two crops are pulse crops and are ICRISET mandate crops. So first I will talk something about ICRISET. It's one of the international centers, as you know, and our vision is a prosperous, food secure and resilient dryland tropics. We have a mission to reduce poverty, hunger, malnutrition and environmental degradation in these dryland tropics. These are ICRISET locations. We have headquarters at India, Hyderabad, and two regional hubs, Eastern and Southern Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya, and West and Central Africa in Bamako, Mali. So the research which ICRISET does has implications in 55 countries and 2.5 billion people. Our capabilities, as an international center, we work in multidisciplinary teams, high class and high quality science, starting from natural resources management, genetics, crop science, bioinformatics, phenotyping, to economics and social sciences. We are on ground with our offices, as I indicated earlier, in Kenya, Malawi, Mali, Mozambique, Niger, Nigeria, Zimbabwe and India. And we can't solve all the problems, so we work in partnership at different levels, at local levels, regional levels, national levels and as international level. And we do participatory kind of research and work. And this is inclusive market oriented development. This is a strategy under which ICRISET works, so that the poorest of the poor farmer get benefits of the research done at ICRISET. Now, these are our mandate crops: sorghum, pearl millet, chickpea, pigeon pea, groundnut, and finger millet is the sixth mandate crop we had. And of them, I will be talking only of chickpea and pigeon pea as the two these are the two pulses. Chickpea is cultivated in about 58 to 60 countries, with 11.6 million tons production, average of 5 years, 2009 to 2013. Asia, and in Asia again, India is the major producer. About 85% of global chickpea is cultivated and produced in India. Similarly, pigeon pea, 4.2 million tons, and again Asia is the biggest producer. And in last few months, pigeon pea in India is sold at about $4 a kilo, which is at least twice the cost of chicken. But most of Indian population, as you know, 80-85% is vegetarian. So if somebody gives me chicken even free, I don't eat it. So I need my pigeon pea, I need my chickpeas and others. And that's where the importance and nutritional content of these crops are so important. Millions and billions of the people. So may the chickpea and pigeon pea groundnut producing countries, you can see India will be everywhere. And then you have Pakistan, some production in Australia. And currently pigeon pea is imported not only from Myanmar, but from Malawi, Tanzania, where they produce lot of pigeon pea, and any amount of pigeon pea can be produced anywhere, and I am sure India will be ready to import it because we really need it. The earlier presentations has been dealing about the malnutrition, the value, nutritional value of whether chickpea, beans or others. So we all know that kind of malnutrition that occurs in India, that occurs in Africa, and 40% of world's children are malnourished. and 30% of them have at least low birth rate. 2.5 million, 2.5 million children die every year. And availability of these pulses is not more than 10 grams. If you see the kind of figure was in one of the presentation, I think Mike was showing that 80 gram fiber or earlier than that presentation. So as I indicated, we work on chickpea and pigeon pea, and we have the largest collection obviously of these two crops. But globally, if you see, about 98,000 of chickpea accessions are there in about 84-85 gene banks, 48 countries. Only 30 or 35% of them would be unique, because if I have 20,000 accessions and ICADA has another 15,000, then almost at least 12 to 13,000 of them are common everywhere. NBPGR have 14,000 accessions. Of them, at least 13,000 would be common. So if you want to know the unique accessions would be there, will not be more than about 25 to 30% of them. Similarly, pigeon pea, 43,000 accessions of pigeon pea are there in 76 gene bank in 50 countries. And Equiset gene bank has the largest collection of chickpeas of 20,000, more than 20,000 from 60 countries. And pigeon pea about 14,000 from 74 countries. But 90% of these 13,000 or 14,000 are from India itself, because that's a center of origin. Now, we can't have really information, or rather reliable information, on whole collections. You can have some indicative information which can provide some indications, but breeding work are not done on basis of indicative information. It's done when you have to select a parent. That should be based on reliable information. So we realized it long back in 1990s itself, that we have to have representative subsets which represents our entire collections, which we can evaluate conveniently. And then we followed the core collection approach suggested by Sir Otto Frankel. We developed and then realized that that's not going to work because its size is still too large. Then we came with the concept of the mini core collection, and then now that's the gateway for us for most of the things. And let me admit also here that our research on nutritional aspect of germplasm is not at that stage at which we are doing drought tolerance, salinity tolerance, or other things. In groundnut it is, but not in chickpea and pigeon pea to that extent. So we have based on about 17,000 accessions and 13 quantitative traits, we have about 2,000 lines which we are in chickpea core collection, in pigeon pea about 1,300. And the mini core collection, we had chickpea 211 and pigeon pea about 146. So these mini core subsets we have used. But in chickpea is also, protein is a descriptor. So we have really reasonable information on about 12,000 lines, and a huge variation is there. But then take this data with pinch of salt, because that's not in a single season, not replicated. And we have lines in pigeon pea which are about up to more than 25%, about 480 lines which have more than 25% protein. Mini core collection variation is limited in case of pigeon pea. And these are some of the lines where in high protein content in cultivated types is there. If you see the control cultivar, the bottom one, you have 19%, so you have up to 31% protein in germplasm line. And then why we are putting the seed color, because sometimes several of these traits are related with the seed color, be it phenolic content and others. Vegetable types of pigeon pea agent, I mean, this is an important use of this crop. It's used in Caribbean, Latin America, South Asia also, and East African regions. If you go in the state of Gujarat or in Caribbean countries, it's used as peas. And we have identified about 51 accessions which are vegetable types. They have more than five to six seeds per pod, and seed size is quite big. And if you see the 100 seed weight, you will find, I'm sure Dr. Singh would be wondering why 29 gram is there, 100 seed weight. So this is the peas, green peas, not dried ones. And the content of protein in those green peas is about 22-23%, and total soluble sugar is also good. Wild relatives have been also screened for some of these excess, some of these traits, for instance, for protein. But very few of them are crossable. For instance, the scarabaeides and cajunifolius, they are easily crossable. Others are not that easily crossable. Similarly, using scarabaeides about 18 years back, some of the lines have been developed, ICP87162, which has up to 32% protein, seed protein. And there are several other derivatives available which have 27-32% protein. And this is not really very systematic work done, but as a consequence, that these crosses were made for some other purpose, but then if you start looking at the protein content, you find them, and then that's how it is. Not really a very systematic work by taking out some of the wild or cultivated one and going for protein. These are some of the Rinkosia species. We have quite a good collection of them, and iron content in them is quite high. And again, they are not crossable with the cultivated Cajunus cajan. In some of them, about 81 ppm or 82 ppm. And in fact, some of them flowers in 360 to 540 days. It takes lot time. And there was one species which we were able to characterize and reproduce about 3 years back in last 35 years, because it took 540 days to flower. These are some of other species which are again not crossable, and the range for zinc is there, and quite a high range of zinc. Chickpeas. We know there are two types of chickpeas, desi and kabuli type, and the colored one are generally desi type, and cream color are kabuli. There is also third one which is based on shape, pea shape or intermediate, but the number of accessions is too low in the germplasm. So we have for chickpea mini core collection, we have really had one or two seasons data on iron content, zinc content, and other traits. And here we have used one of the control cultivars, 92944, which is a heat tolerant cultivar and released as in different states of India, and quite popular. And if you see, compared to that, out of 211, you get 23 accessions which are better than 92944. If you evaluate these lines also for yield, quite a few of them are high yielding as well. I would be covering that in the subsequent slides. And five accessions, ICCs, they had much more iron content. And then in case of zinc content, L550, that's a kabuli type line, and there are 20-41% higher zinc in 44 accessions. And then again, these are the five best zinc containing accessions. Protein content, and then again in mini core collections. So 17 accessions have up to 26% higher protein than the control cultivar ICCB2, and ICCB2 is a variety bread at Ikriset, one of the very popular variety at Ikriset, so donation type, wilt resistant. And then in 5x sessions, again up to 23% protein content is there. 44x sessions, again you have to see the combination whether protein, iron and zinc. You have quite a few of the X sessions which have a good combination of all these three nutrients. And these are the selected one, and we had three control cultivar, 92944, which is recently released, L550, of course, is a variety which is about 30 years old from Ludhiana, Kabuli type, ICCB2 also from Ikriset. And several germplasm lines are much, much better. And these germplasm lines are also not bad yielders. They are quite good yielders. Then you have the lines which have iron, zinc, protein, and resistances to other traits. And this comes from one of our study in 2013, where we have shown that there are lines which are multiple resistant, high yielding lines, and then their nutritional contents are much, much better than the best variety we had at Ikriset. And these are some of the stresses. If you see drought, salinity, or drought, salinity, Fusarium wilt and Botrytis gray mold, or drought and heat tolerance also in some of these accessions, both Desi and Kabuli types. One of my MSc students did this work for evaluating mini core collection in Tamil Nadu for oligosaccharides, and Anigiri was considered as the control in that study, and 21 accessions had high, up to 100% higher sucrose content than Anigiri. Similarly, 8 accessions have high raffinose content, then G130, because for raffinose, G130, that's a late maturing variety or control cultivar, had high values. 16 accessions out of 211 only were better than Anigiri, again the control cultivar, and 23 accessions have up to 61% higher stack use. We have 7 seasons data for yield and other traits on these lines. So what I am trying to say is that not only for these nutritional traits and resistances and others, but their yield potential, their acceptability in terms of yield in farmers' field could be good because they perform well. And as you can see, that some of these lines, ICC 1180, yields up to 1.5 tons per hectare. Average yield under rain-fed conditions at 7 seasons, that's average of that. And if you see the control cultivar like G130, 1300 or Anigiri, similar to Anigiri. But if you see the sucrose content, raffinose or stachyose content, in these accessions is much, much better. We know the importance of phytochemicals and for human health, that how they do. And anthocyanin content or isoflavins or phenols we started doing. But then the problem was that the kind of variation you get from one instrument to another was too high, and I'm not going to present that because I'm not convinced with the values we have about them. And this is the variation for seed color you can get, and seed color is related with some of these phenols content and like that, as is indicated, that if you have different seed colors, whether it's a whole seed, dehulled seeds or seed coat, you get lot of variation that can be related even with the seed color. And this is the latest one which I am talking from the work of one of my colleagues who is sitting over here, Dr. Sharma, that we started making some critical crosses for involving reticulatum and echinospermum with the cultivated ones. So you can see that the parents, there is not much difference among the parents, but you get a lot of transgressive segregants, not only in terms of protein content, green one over at the end, but even in terms of magnesium, iron, zinc, and calcium. A huge transgressive segregants you find there. But these are very preliminary results, and we need to confirm and reconfirm. And also, this is only F2 generation, and a lot of heterotic effects are there. So in my conclusions, I'll say that we know the malnutrition results in enormous negative socioeconomic factors, and accessions, germplasm accessions with high seed protein content, iron, zinc have been identified, and we are using again mini core collection as our approach to enter even core collection or entire collection. So if we get two or three accessions which are good, you can really go to core collection and select accessions from that cluster. If you want still more, you can go to entire 20,000 and go to the clusters from where these accessions do come. Targeted pre-breeding we would be involving, not for everything, and then only for those traits for which we have less variability in the cultivated germplasm. And then genetic variation related to these traits is enormous. We have sampled only 1%, that is mini core collection. There is maybe huge variation in the remaining 99%. And with that, I thank you all. And any question, I'd be pleased to answer.
We do have time for a couple of questions.
Yeah.
Sorry, how is the progress of linking the traits that you discovered, the lines you've discovered with these important traits with the genotyping?
Okay, so the question is that what is the progress of linking these traits with the genotyping, isn't it? The data we are having on some of these traits is not really that high quality, in the sense, if I have to go for iron content, there is a huge variation between replication to replication. So if you run with this, the kind of molecular data you get 58 MTAs or 200 MTAs, and to me really that doesn't make much sense. Unless the data between replication or between location is really of very, very reliable quality, you can still publish it, there is no problem with that, but that doesn't give you anything. So what our main target is, first to get this evaluation for nutritional trait on the track, and the way we want it to be, so that variation is not really very high, because then what you are getting is really environmental related rather than genotypic related. Yeah, Mike. Yeah.
Just quick question on the vegetable pigeon peas.
Yes.
Is it immature seeds or the pods?
Immature seed. Peace.
Thank you very much.